And welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you, coming to you from my basement out here in the eastern plains of Colorado, suggesting a 21st century reformation according to God's Word, suggesting also that the humanists and the existentialists and others who have effectively dominated our world and foisted their worldview upon every single one of our institutions didn't get it right. So as we question our economic systems, we question John Maynard Keynes and his fractional banking system that he imposed on us largely because he was an existentialist and not coming at it from a basically biblical perspective. We also question a lot of other things like Marxism and redistribution of the wealth and socialism. We question the social theory that puts together our educational systems today. We question a lot of these things in this program, largely because our socioeconomic systems are breaking down, even as we speak. But more than that, these systems really have very little to do with what God has given us in terms of concrete guidance in His Word for how we do education, how we do economics, how we do our social systems and our economic systems. And if we get back to the Word of God, we think that we can rebuild our systems and build them in a proper way and enjoy God's blessing as a result of that. And so that's sort of the agenda that we address on this program. And today we're going to talk about American health. America's health is declining. There's no question about it. I've heard it from a number of sources. It appears this generation will be the first generation in a long time to live a shorter lifespan than their parents. That's right. Because of a lot of things. But hey, let me just suggest one thing. Exodus 20 and verse 12. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Now, this is sort of a wild guess here, but I wonder if the generation coming out of the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s have not been honoring their parents as they ought to. I wonder if they launched a teenage rebellion, a revolution against the previous generation or the previous generations. I wonder if that might have some contributing effect on what happens to the lifespan of the next generation. Just wondering, because God knows what He's talking about. His law is still in stone, and the fifth commandment has this promise connected to it that those who do not honor mother and father will not live long upon the earth. Well, there are other verses as well. Deuteronomy 28:58 through 61 speaks of, if thou wilt not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that thou mayest fear this glorious and fearful name, the Lord thy God, then the Lord will make thy plagues wonderful, and that is incredible, and the plagues of thy seed, even great plagues of great continuance, sore sicknesses of long continuance. Moreover, he will bring upon thee all the diseases of Egypt, which thou wast afraid of, and they shall cleave to thee, also every sickness, every plague, which is not written in the book of this law, etc., etc., etc. That is, apparently God wants nations like ours and others to fear God, to teach the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge in their schools. And if man becomes too proud, and if man ceases to fear God as he ought to, God says, hey, there are going to be problems. They're going to be really significant problems. And I have mentioned before that I think it's a bad idea to centralize power, for proud men to centralize power such that some 49% of the meat industry is being put together in 25 feedlots across the country. That's a really bad idea for a lot of reasons. First and foremost of which is that centralizing power, centralizing control over agricultural systems or any forms of systems have never been all that productive. And secondly, And it really has not in accordance with the will of God, if you understand what's going on at the Tower of Babel and what God did shortly afterwards. But also understand, friends, if you put 48% of the American meat production in 25 feedlots, that's a lot of animals. That's a lot of animals. That's the centralization of a lot of animals. And never sure what's going to happen with the development, the evolution, the mutation of the superbug and bugs that will be impervious to the sorts of antibiotics that we've been using for the last 30, 40, 50, 60 years. World Health Organization president, I treated this story a number of weeks ago, but the World Health Organization president wrote a book called The End of Modern Medicine as We Know It. Why? Because we centralize people. We centralize organic matter, and that doesn't really help us much over the long haul. Well, friends, today we're going to talk about this issue of agriculture, food, and how we can cultivate, as Christians, health for godly generations. That's the name of the book by Renee DeGroat, and she is with me right now on the Generations Broadcast. Renee, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mr. Swanson, for having me. Thanks for your program, too. It's one of my favorite things to listen to.
Well, thank you. It's always good to have fans out there. But your book, I think, is a timely book. You say it's a reformational perspective. That's the top of the book, Health for Godly Generations. You intend to reform the area of health and food. You believe this is an area that needs reformation?
Yes, I think it is. Food has always been important, but obviously American health is really declining. And like you said, this generation might not even outlive its parents. There's confusing messages from every quarter that give contradicting answers for health, and we really need Christian advice about it.
Renee, do you think that America is more unhealthy than other nations? Even European nations, for example.
Yes, I think I've seen some statistics about that it is more unhealthful. Certainly it's more obese. Certainly we spend more money on health care than any other nation, and it's not working. Certainly we have more national organizations about health than most other countries, and it's not really working.
Why is America so unhealthy, Renee? I know that's what you treat in your book, Health for Godly Generations, but can you synopsize some of the reasons why Americans are so unhealthy?
Well, for one reason, our industrial agriculture over the last 50 years is just a complete shift from how agriculture has always been done before, and that's come at the same time as more mothers working outside the home, more just chasing of materialism in every quarter. So we're leaving cottage industry, like you like to talk about, and where people would eat homemade food and know about the food that they're eating, and we've gotten totally, completely away from that, basically completely the opposite.
Renee, that's one reason why we talk about family economies, because we don't want to separate any of these issues. These things are all integrated. You got 64% of kids under six latchkey because mom and dad are working. 70% of young men not grown up by 30 years of age, up from 30% in 1970. You've got a social breakdown happening around us. If you've got a social breakdown, certainly the health situation of the nation, the health situation of the children who are raised in this milieu is going to be affected. There's no question about it. These things are interconnected, and we can't disconnect them. That's one reason why if you're going to write a book about food, I guess you're going to have to write it about industry, about parenting, about family, about fatherhood, about mentorship, you know, about all of the other things we talk about. Sort of like everything's interconnected, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. And Americans have chased all these other things without considering how it would make a difference. And now we're realizing it for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's see. One of the issues that's important, it's hard to know how to go over a 250-page book in just 25 minutes. You've done a wonderful job. In fact, this is one of the best-written books on the subject I know of, Renee. But let me ask you this. Obviously, restraint is important. Self-control is important. We're to do all things in moderation. You know, one of the first things that comes to mind when we talk about unhealthy Americans is how much they eat. Now, of course, Americans are much bigger than, say, the Japanese, but you go to Japan, go to the average restaurant, you're going to get about one third. I'm not kidding. You're going to get one third of the portion that you'll get in an average American restaurant. Okay. I mean, one third, Renee, you'll get one third of what you get in the average American restaurant in a Japanese restaurant. You might even get a quarter of it for a single serving. So, you know, I've had Japanese come over here on business and, you know, we go to some steakhouse. And they get the steak, they laugh, they take pictures of it. You know, they put their hand next to it and take a picture, and because they want to show all their friends. I mean, here is a steak that is going to be 6 to 7 times the size of what they will eat in Japan. Okay, so I guess the first question here on excess is how much is too much? I mean, you know, again, it's again hard because some people are bigger than others, but you know, at what point do we come to the realization that we're just eating too much?
Yeah, that's a good question. A few things about that is that food is so available and Americans are so wealthy that we just buying it all the time. And when food isn't of a very good quality, it's easy not to be satisfied with it, so we just eat more of it instead of eating the amount we need because it doesn't satisfy. So people just keep eating more and more. Even a lot of things that are going on with artificial sweeteners and low-fat foods, they trick the body into not thinking it's satisfied, and the body just keeps eating more.
Wow. And also,
our American culture, in a lot of ways, is so, you know, fast and into having, you know, everything convenient and at high speed. So we don't pay attention to how full we are. And, like, you know, the French, for instance, savor their food and take a long time at a meal and, you know, have a totally different culture about appreciating food. And you'd think, oh, they focus too much on it, but they don't. Just like the Japanese, they're not obese as a whole nation at all.
What about the spiritual aspect of this, Renee? Is it possible that some Americans are worshiping pleasure and they're turning into a bunch of fat Epicureans? I don't know if I can use those words. They sound almost derogatory, but, you know, what's going on out there?
Yes, I think so. If they're paying attention to food in a very, you know, unhealthy, spiritually wise sort of way, that they just use it, as I write in my book, they use food to serve themselves instead of using food to serve God. And when people do that, there's no limit to what they do, to the kind of food they eat, which most of the time is junk that's very unhealthy, as well as how much they eat, because it's a way of getting pleasure. They're not finding pleasure and joy in the biblical ways, and pleasure and joy in their spiritual life. So they're finding it in other things, as the ungodly always do. And there's many avenues to do that, and food is a really easy one that's very prevalent.
Yeah, and as you said, food is so incredibly cheap here in America. I don't know what we spend, but my guess it's only, you know, 15-20% of our income goes to food, and you can probably get pretty big. You know, your BMI can go right through the ceiling on 15-20% of your salary. Moreover, you know, here's the other thing I've noticed is those on welfare often are the most obese of them all. Because, again, the government is there to provide womb-to-tomb security, and some of that security is found in food.
Now, I've actually heard that Americans spend about 10 to 12% of their income on food, but Europeans,
incredible,
and possibly also Japanese, spend about 14 to 17% of their income on food. So they actually spend more. It's more important to them.
Yeah.
To do well, and they do it better because they're paying a little more attention to it.
And generally speaking, the American median income is better, and the American standard of living is better. I think I compared how many color television sets a Swede could buy versus an American, and an American could buy about twice as many, you know, color televisions, this very same kind of thing in America, as an average median income Swede could buy in Sweden. So Americans have a lot of disposable income. And we are living high off the hog, and we are probably right now, say between 1980 and the present day, living the highest standard of living we ever lived in the history of this nation. Of course, in the process, we are spending our grandchildren into debt. So there's that existentialistic thing that's happening too. And Renee, I have to say that I think as things continue, we are going to see that median income fall down. In fact, I think the last 3 years, the median income has dropped about 8-9% adjusted for inflation, meaning the average person is making less. The good times are over as far as the American economy is concerned, and we're just going to have to be a little more careful how we live our lives, and we just can't run out and blow money on ice cream and you know, the most sumptuous restaurant meals we can possibly find in the future. I think we're just going to have to be more careful in how we handle these things in the future. Your thought on that?
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure we are going to have to be more careful. That's why there's a lot of a movement toward doing things closer to your community and closer to your own property, like gardening and buying food locally, because I think that's going to be a lot more necessary as time goes on. And It's interesting how you said that we're, you know, sending ourselves into a lot more debt, and that's true not just economically and morally, getting more morally bankrupt, but also we're just, to use the same analogy for health, we're living on borrowed capital. We're living on the genetic momentum from our grandparents, and every generation that we eat more junk food, we just keep spending it down, and everyone is getting more and more unhealthy, and we don't really notice it on the surface, except it's very, very true in people's propensity to disease.
All right, my friends, you're listening to the Generations Broadcast. Renee DeGroot with me today, author of Health for Godly Generations. Also, you can contact her and find some of her material at healthforgenerations.com or culinaryreformation.com. Renee, did you make it to the food conference down in San Antonio put on by Vision Forum this year?
Yes, I did. I was there listening to the great messages and selling my book.
Yeah.
There was a lot of messages there about the topics you're talking about the American just gluttony, eating too much, and
I think all of us are trying to figure out what is a good balance for our families. Now, obviously, you know, there's Christian liberty here, too. We don't want to curtail Christian liberty. And yet there are some broad principles that are important. Why don't you just for a moment give me some of the principles, but also how you yourself apply these principles, supposing that you are, you know, purchasing $400 of groceries for your family any given month. You go to the grocery store. What are you buying? What are you looking for as you are responsible for the health, the food that is ingested into your own family? What are you looking for? What are the principles, and how do you lay that out? How does that work its way out in your family?
Yes. First of all, I try to look for, a philosophy behind it before even choosing the food. And that philosophy is that we should be doing, you know, what our ancestors did, eating traditional foods, not needing to eat revolutionary things or following the newest trends on what somebody or a government agency says is healthy. Because that can be really confusing and complicated and trendy. So I like to first of all just say, what are the timeless foods, which are just real whole foods? The little philosophy I have on my website to choose foods is that I like to think about foods that are real, whole, natural, traditional, ethically raised, nutrient-dense, and flavorful, usually from organic plants. And I try to think about the animals that were clean in the Old Testament, even though we have liberty about that. I like to try to support local farmers and their foods that are grown in season. Try to make a lot prepared at home from whole foods. So basically just buying foods that are in their natural, original form, and not packaged and made into something else and preserved or added to with a lot of other fillers and flavors. And the problem with that still is that a lot of whole foods have still been tampered with in one way or another, either by, you know, pesticides still on them, or beef that's raised in feedlots, or grain that's been irradiated. So in a lot of those ways, it does still help to buy organic or buy locally where you can meet the farmer or know who's selling it and find out a little more information about it than you can usually know from a regular grocery store shelf.
You're convinced.
That answers your question.
You're convinced, Renee, that the organic farming produces better food.
I think that there are definitely some advantages to it because there won't be pesticide residue on it, but there are some problems too because it's still raised in huge commercial operations, which can be very inefficient, and the food still might not be very nutrient dense. So there's some things it doesn't have, which are pesticides and herbicides, which can be a good thing. A lot of foods conventionally grown have been tested that there's definite pesticide residue in them, and people's bodies have also been tested, and the pesticide residue remains. So I think that is something to be concerned about, even though certified organic is not necessarily the best answer. I think growing locally and growing food yourself is a very, very best answer for sure.
Give me some tiers of quality you might find in your average grocery store. Okay, I'm not going to point at any grocery store. I'm just going to say, take an average grocery store, and if you were to get in there and start buying some of the products you would find on those shelves or in the refrigerated portion of those stores, What is the thing you would buy at the very, very, very end? I mean, if it was the last food available on planet Earth, you would go and pick that up at that grocery store. What's like tier zero? What's at the very, very bottom of the food chain when it comes to me shopping at my local grocery store?
So do you mean the worst food or the best
food? Yeah, the very, very worst.
Okay. Anything... Anything artificially flavored and colored, mm-hmm. usually. Anything high in sugar, mm-hmm. probably. It does not afford very much nutrition. So anything that's packaged that would usually be refrigerated otherwise, like the little jerkies that don't need refrigeration or the little, jerky or like the little yogurts that don't need to be refrigerated or different things like that, you probably know that quite a bit has been done to it if it won't rot and if it doesn't need preservation.
Okay.
So anything.
Now, what about the pig meat? What about the swine meat, the pork?
Mm-hmm.
What's your thought on that? The average pork meat that you would find in the average store today versus, say, wild venison or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at your book here, and it's very interesting. You've got the comparisons. You have some very interesting charts for comparison between different things. Fresh real strawberries versus the artificial strawberry flavor you'd find in a Burger King strawberry milkshake, for example. You have a contrast between factory farmed pork and wild venison. What's the difference there?
The difference is that conventionally raised pork is very, very dirty in the raising conditions, mm-hmm. from their feed to the refuse that they're standing in, to the air that they're breathing, to the care that they're not getting for any disease that they get. So their environment is very dirty, and the way that pigs process their food through their digestive system is made for eating, scavengers. That they eat garbage and rotting things, and their digestive system is very dirty. It's designed completely differently from the animals that God told the Israelites to eat. So on several levels, their pigs are just very, very filthy. So organically raised pigs would be a lot better choice, but their digestive system just still processes food differently. Their meat does not end up as clean. It still has parasites in it many times, and it retains toxins more easily, and it's not nearly as healthy as deer, for instance, which are eating grass all of the time out in the fresh open air. And I give the example of, if you're able to hunt them, that's the freshest, wildest, purest meat, yeah. most nutritional meat you can possibly get.
Well, and that makes me feel really good, Renee, because we have been eating a lot of elk and deer for the last 2 years, thanks to the fact that my son and daughters have had so many permits and they've been successful in the hunt. But of course, we live in Colorado, and for those listeners who happen to be hanging out in New York City, it might be a little more difficult to find, wild deer. But there are other choices as well. And what would you encourage people to do? Again, what we're talking about, I think, again, is a scale of some things are more healthy than others. Now, I think that's one thing that almost everybody in our listening audience can agree to. Now, some people say, well, my own body's ability to fight disease is so strong that, I could eat down at the Denver dump and still survive and do very well and fight off all of the possible infections that would come through the bacteria that I'd be ingesting there. Now, some people say, I've got just this ironclad stomach and I've got a great, you know, defense system within my body. But the fact of the matter is there are some foods that are more healthy than others. And I think a lot of folks would agree. In fact, I think about the majority of our listening audience would agree with that. Now, again, moving up from the strawberry red dyes and other things, where would you go in the average grocery store? Where would you shop?
Right. I agree that there's always levels. So I just encourage people to do the best that they can, because just take the next step, towards something healthier.
And it might take more money too, Renee. I mean, they may have to invest more money in better food. Does that make sense? If you were to buy quality food, you might have to spend more money. I think that makes sense to me.
Right. You usually do. So it has to be made more of a, it has to become a priority before that's going to happen. And I know, and you know, I don't have to feed a family with a lot of children, so I don't have all the answers on how to make that work. But I know that people can do a lot. And even just eating whole foods instead of packaged foods and preparing them yourselves at home can be a lot less expensive than buying processed foods, even if you don't buy everything organic. So in New York City, for meat, I would suggest try to eat grass-fed beef, you know, instead of if you can't do venison, which is totally understandable. Just grass-fed beef is a great choice as far as another tier up from that.
And fruits and vegetables, I think they have those in New York, I think.
For sure. And the more that people support local farmers markets and try to search out local farms, the demand or the market will meet the demand for it. So if people just start to buy more in a certain way, I think it will help to shape the economy and the market. And I think that we need to start moving that direction.
Renee, a last question here for you. But I think people are thinking, you know, the government is out to keep us healthy. I mean, we dump billions and billions of dollars into the Food and Drug Administration, and they have tens of thousands of employees, and they do their scientific studies. We are in good hands with the FDA. I mean, shouldn't we trust the system to keep us healthy and strong? You know, again, I think people think that. Now, I've got all my reasons why you probably shouldn't trust the government, but I'm going to shut up for a second. I'm going to ask you about that one.
Yeah. Well, first of all, they're so very centralized that they can't be efficient, and they can't know everything about each person. And the second main thing is that there's a lot of money going back and forth between pharmaceutical companies and largest food conglomerates and the government and the government agencies and the people that are working for one and then working for the other, and there's a lot of conflict of interest there.
Wow. So
they're not going to be interested in supporting smaller businesses or research for nutritional things. The money is behind the drugs and the large food industries. There's not any profit in smaller companies and alternative therapies.
And we wonder how much greed and power are involved in this whole thing. As big government plays off of big business, which plays off of big pharmaceutical companies, which plays off of the increased socialization of medicine and to the aggrandizement of big government, you wonder if these people are in a rather unhealthy coalition against the populace, especially if, again, their whole system is based more in greed and power than it is in the fear of God. And I think that's kind of what we keep getting back to. But so I guess what we're encouraging folks to do is make your own decisions, develop some of your own home businesses. Hopefully we can decentralize agriculture more and more. And we're certainly seeing that happen. And don't trust the government to do everything for you.
Renee, I mean, these are very, very basic principles that we apply to every other area of life. We're just talking about food today on this edition of the program, and I think you're just adding to that a little bit. Again, we're not trying to tell everybody exactly what to buy and what to use to feed their families, but we are saying at least set a good trajectory for your family and do what you can to improve the health and the diet of your family. Well, Renee DeGroot has new book out called Health for Godly Generations. The website's, by the way, healthforgenerations.com and culinaryreformation.com if you'd like more information on Renee's work. Renee, thanks so much for joining us today on Generations.
Thanks for having me. It's been great, Mr. Swanson.
And you have been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson. Good stuff on this edition of the program. And I encourage you to get the book, Health for Godly Generations, A Reformational Perspective by Renee DeGroot, and other resources as well. I realize this is a controversial topic, and it's difficult to say it all in one setting, and there are different people with different perspectives. But suffice it to say, it's important for us, I think, as fathers and mothers who care about our children, to take our own take on this and do our own research and don't just trust the FDA and the government to provide everything needful for the health and the good situation for your family. It's not going to happen, friends. It doesn't happen in education, not going to happen in health, not going to happen in anything. We just have to bring the principles of God's word to bear as best as we possibly can and live our lives according to the socioeconomic systems that God has laid out in his word. And so that's why we do our family economics conferences, which is really the big picture of what we talk about when we talk about food and work and education and economics and entertainment and everything else. It's the family oikonomia. It's the family vision that we talk about in our family economics conferences. So be sure to attend our family economics conferences, which we sponsor every single year. The next one is scheduled for St. Louis, Missouri, next May of 2013. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.